Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 72 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. Hi, Sean.
Hello, how are you? Just drop me an iPad, there we go.
That's a regular event. You're just talking about that car alarm that's going off all the time. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I've got a bit of a throat.
Yeah, you've coughed it all out now.
Yeah, I've been sat down with people for the last couple of weeks coughing at me, and I've been avoiding it, and that's finally got me, I think.
Yeah, no Ebola yet.
No, yes, yeah, that's next week. That sounds horrible, doesn't it? This sweeping across the world. That's scary.
Well, it's not quite the world yet.
Well, it's actually hit into Europe, isn't it? And into the States.
Yeah.
That idea that there are plagues that will come and plague us. Scary stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, I'm not worried, but yeah, it's a bit freaky, isn't it?
So how's your week been? What have you been up to?
It's been cool. No baby yet. Big news. No baby. Though by the time this one goes out, surely...
Do you think?
He or she will have arrived, so...
Yeah.
I was actually thinking, I wonder how many people will be listening to the show at the time when I'm actually, like...
I think if B went into labour now, what we should do is to rush out of here with the microphone and go there and do it live. We could do a live podcast in the birthing suite.
Oh, man, she'd love it. It'd be a long one. Last time it was, like... 40-hour labour or something.
I'm sure everyone would hang in there, waiting for the moment.
I'm not sure I've got enough storage on my laptop, but yeah. Yeah, no news yet, but wish me luck. At least one of us. It's so tough for us fellas, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? The woman has the baby and the man goes home, and okay, he hasn't had a lot of sleep, and everyone goes, oh, well done, mate, come down the pub and have a drink, and we'll wet the baby's head.
Yeah.
You know? And everyone goes, oh, congratulations, like, you've done this great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a role to play, don't we?
Yeah.
Hand holding.
About 2 minutes, is it?
Yeah. I'm just going to make sure my... Because it was a long one last time, and I just need to make sure my phone's fully charged. So I'm not sitting around. No, she'll be all right. So, yeah, wish us luck. Wish us luck. Yeah, I've had car issues this week as well. My battery was on the way out, so I had to jump start it 3 times.
Have you got a new battery now?
I have, and it's done the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Batteries don't last, do they?
No, I found that out this week as well. A little tip for you. How are you doing?
I've had a strange week. We had a fabulous weekend because it was one of Ree's brother's birthdays, Mark.
Yep.
And we had a bouncy castle around here for all the kids. And
yeah.
That was fun. It was a good weekend. I was going to run the Metric Marathon on Sunday, and they tell me it's because I overtrain because I'm too enthusiastic, is I ended up damaging my leg in training. I was doing a 16-mile run, and at 14 miles, my leg went and didn't come back. So I was told by the coach and the physio not to do the race, which kind of cheesed me off a bit.
Is a metric marathon 16 miles? I know it's 26.
Well, it works out 16 miles. It's 26.2 kilometres.
Yeah.
So 16 miles, yeah. And it's weird because it's this thing about, I've actually run the distance. Why is it that I need to run the race and get the gong? That's odd.
Yeah.
That's strange. But I'm
okay. You're still going to do it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll do it next year.
Yeah.
I will be there.
Very good. We're talking about long-term illness this week, both from the side of the carer and the person that's got the condition, whatever it may be. There'll be a blog post on the website. Check out liveinthepresent.co.uk, which Sean, I'm sure, is... Well, he hasn't really, as I write this, but it will be...
No, he has.
It's going to be a rip-roaring read.
It is here. And it starts off with the concept that life is a terminal illness.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what you and I were talking about.
It's a cheery start. Yeah.
It starts off with that. It's like one of the things that is inevitably true is that we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not good in our society at dealing with that until it happens. When it happens, we all get surprised and go, oh, my God, I wasn't expecting that to happen. Inevitably it does, and it will. But the thing about that... for me, is that dying can either be fast and quick and boomf and you're gone.
Yeah.
Or for lots of people, it's a drawn-out process, which may be involve some pretty horrible treatments that may be even worse than the illness that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, there will be long-term disabilities, which is kind of the kind of things that we're looking at in a way.
Yeah. This week. Yeah, there's a quote from a film called Fight Club, which I was obsessed with when I was in my university days.
Yeah.
Yeah, on a long enough timeline, the survival rate for everything drops to zero, he says. It's true, isn't it? And, yeah, sometimes, well, we're talking about long-term illness here, but sometimes we get lucky, don't we, with things, and they kind of jolt us into action and show us how valuable life is.
I think that we've said it before on this, haven't we, that people that would see something like a cancer and they would say, cancer is the thing that really changed my life. You know, it was a really positive influence. I survived it, but it made me look at things. It made me change my life. It made me get my life on track. It made me sort myself.
I read an article about, I'll put the link in the show notes on the site, but it was about a Belgian doctor or scientist who was part of the team that discovered Ebola in the 70s.
Right.
Who was given this petri dish of something in his lab that they brought back just to see what it was, and it turned out that they traced it back to where it was, and they discovered Ebola, as they named it. Actually, they named it after a nearby river to the town. They didn't want to call it after the town because that would kill the town. I mean, put stigma on it. But when he went to Africa to find the source of it, he one night or one evening he felt really bad, really dodgy, and he thought, obviously, he contracted this that he'd been studying and been around or nearby. So yeah, he had an evening and a night where he was absolutely terrified that, you know, that was it for him. But it turned out the next day it was something else. It was just some kind of other virus that he got over, and that kind of woke him up to this.
Yeah.
To the wonders of life.
But do we have a case in this country of a nurse who contracted Ebola and came back to this country and has been cured?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So,
yeah. That cure is possible in the right circumstances.
There isn't a cure, but it's like some people just seem to are immune to it. But I think it's like 1 in 10 people that contracted it managed to just leave them.
Yeah. Isn't that Darwin's theory of natural selection?
Yeah, well, you wonder then, don't you? If this thing, it really, it's a virus's purpose is to spread, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you just wonder, 1 in 10, what's the population of the world, 7-8 billion?
Yeah, but that would be 90% of the world would die if everybody got it, on those statistics.
Yeah, was. Okay.
But very, very often in history, you look at how populations, whether it's dinosaurs or whatever, have been wiped out or diminished by... after the Black Death, after the plague in Britain, there were whole towns that had been abandoned.
Yep.
There was just no one left in the towns.
Yep.
And it was like that. I think it was something like half the population at the time. People always say things like, you know, nature finds its own way of balancing things. And people will say to me odd things like, we're due for a war, or we're due for a disaster, you know, to sort people out of it. I don't know the realities of those kinds of things, but if something like Ebola does spread, everybody thought it would be HIV that would be the thing that would be taking people out. I don't know.
Yeah, we did all right with that.
Yeah.
SARS and all that. We're getting a bit off topic here, but only slightly, I guess. Yeah, we're talking about long-term illness and how it can affect the people with the illness and the people that have to care for those people. In England, there is a stat here I got from the gov.uk. Well, it's a UK site, so I don't know why it's just England. But in England, more than 15 million people have a long-term condition, a health problem that can't be cured but can be controlled by medication or other therapies. So that's a lot of people.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that those people are living in a disabled state.
I don't know.
They may be, and I think that's an important thing. Maybe those three conditions that I would identify, people that have an illness, a condition, a syndrome, a disease or whatever, and they're functioning normally. There are the people who have a disease or illness or disability that may limit a lot of what they do, and that may affect both them and their whole family. But they're living with it through life. And then there are those people who have some kind of disability which is terminal.
Yeah.
And that the terminality of that may be over many years.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at someone like Stephen Hawking, who has a degenerative nerve problem,
yep.
that his body functions very little now, I guess, but his brain is amazingly intact.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been alive for many, many years.
Indeed, and churning out some pretty amazing work.
And he may be alive for a lot longer. And obviously there are people who work with him to keep him alive. He couldn't keep himself alive.
Well, you know, he always has a different suit on every time I see him on the news, so yeah.
Yeah, someone's changing his suits.
Yeah.
And that's it, isn't it? It's like when we have those kinds of disabilities, we are dependent on other people to look after us.
Yeah.
And if that's a family, my thing about if you have an alcoholic in a family, the whole family has an alcohol problem. If you have someone in a family who has a disability, then the whole family has a disability problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that kind of does the situation that people are in disable us or disable them? But there are many people, like we've identified with people like the Paralympians, who would have an apparent disability in one situation, but they haven't disabled themselves, they've enabled themselves.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that we have to consider in this is it isn't necessarily what happens to us, but our response to it.
Okay.
Are we disabled by what happens or enabled by what happens?
Yeah, I mean, you've talked about clients or people you've worked with, you know, been on the deathbed and they're just so grateful that they've still got, like, they can still move their little finger.
Yeah, and that's just a beautiful thing to see when you see people that are just so connected to themselves that the fact that the one arm, one leg still works is such a joy for them.
Yeah.
And for me, they are people very often who would I see as they've lived with their terminal illness as opposed to been dying from their terminal illness.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe the journey is different, but the destination is the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see people who get some kind of condition, maybe a cancer or whatever, and from the moment of diagnosis for the next 8 years, perhaps, they've been dying.
Yeah.
They've been focused on the idea of dying as opposed to the person who is doing the living in the present and is living with their illness as opposed to dying from their illness.
Yeah, huge difference between the two, aren't there?
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Yeah. The journey could be the same distance,
mm-hmm.
and the physical and emotional experience could be very similar, but the outcome and the daily experience is different.
Yeah.
Because the person that's living in the present is enjoying the moment. And the thing is that even if you and I are going to die tomorrow, we're not dying today.
Mm-hmm.
We need to live today. We can die tomorrow.
Yeah, I can wait. You can wait.
Yeah.
Let's push it back even further.
Yeah, okay, day after.
Let's not be silly.
The day after that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. We actually did an episode way back on pain, didn't we? Dealing with pain, which is probably quite relevant as well to this.
So. Yeah.
I'll put the link in the show notes to that. It's probably worth a listen. I think I got in a bit of trouble for that one. I think I overdid it in the flippancy.
You're good at that, though.
A little bit. But no, it's a good episode. Yeah, I'd suggest having listened to that as well. Really relevant.
Yeah.
But people are living longer than ever as well, aren't we?
Yes, which means that there are more and more people that have disabilities.
It's almost a given now. It's kind of assumed for my generation that we're going to either need care later in our lives, or obviously a lot more people now being diagnosed with Alzheimer's, dementia, yeah. That kind of thing. Or that, yeah. You know, but yeah, my folks listen to this show, so I'll lay on the lines. You know, I'm probably going to have to look after them at some point. Depending about.
There's something that needs to be said, I think, which may be a bit unpopular or unpalatable to say.
Say it. It's usually me.
Is that? I see lots of situations where people do have problems, and maybe they're physical problems or whatever. Maybe they're 80, 90, whatever. And
yep.
Maybe they've got dodgy legs or whatever. What tends to happen is, in our society, is we say to people, oh, no, stay where you are, I'll get you a cup of tea. You know, I'll look after you, you stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what we should be saying is, no, you get up and you come with me, let's make a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more that we get that person to sit down and to not use their legs, the more their muscles waste, and then the more disabled they become. And we end up supporting the problem rather than the person.
Yeah.
So I think that although it may sound a bit hard-hearted, but I think that as people wind down and maybe their legs are dodgy, what we do is we get them up every day and we make sure they walk around the block.
Okay.
That they keep their muscles working, that we keep people as mobile as we can. And that's, I think that individually we need to do that for ourselves. We need to have that mindset where I need to keep going for as long as possible.
Some people just have that built in, like my grandma. She's well into her 80s and she's like...
Yeah, but you'd never believe that if you're your grand. She's a very young kind of person.
She'd much rather go out with a bang than sitting on a sofa for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. But how many people do sit on sofas? I mean, they sit on sofas when they're in middle age or younger and
we're
become...
We're on sofas right now.
No, but we're not couch potatoes.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Well, winter's coming, isn't it? So, yeah, I'll be settling in a bit more. But, yeah, go on.
But it's the responsibility of self. I think in Britain particularly, other countries won't be experiencing this, but because we've had this thing called the welfare state and we've had the NHS, which has been such a profound institution, but it's dying. If anything's terminal in Britain, then the welfare state is terminal.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming up for an election, so we have lots of politicians that are making the right noises about how much they want to save the welfare state. And the whole thing's a joke. If you look at the overspend that we have in this country, there's no way any of it can survive. And it doesn't matter which way you wrap the package up, within a fairly short space of time, few years, 5 years, could be 10 years, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
It won't be here. And that means that people in Britain who have relied on this thing to look after them are going to have to become self-reliant.
It's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge transition for us. I think other countries have already done it. They don't have this facility that we've had. And it'll be a big change. So, I mean, I go along with the idea that each of us have to become the expert in being ourselves. You have to be the expert in being Ed. But that means you've got to be the expert in your mind, your body, in your emotions. You have to learn how you work.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look after what you've got.
Take control of the situation.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's too easy to give it to another person or to things like hospitals or doctors.
When we've got some people aren't in a fit state to literally to make that decision, are they? And then the ripple effect when something like that happens through a family or the friend, whoever's looking after them, can be pretty incredible, hey?
Yeah. Okay, next thing I'd like to say that for some people is controversial. I think that we should all consider, or whatever age you are, whether you're a teenager or whether you're an octogenarian, I think that we should all consider making living wills.
Yeah.
So that we're very clear about if something happens to us, what do we want to happen next?
Mm-hmm.
And when you make a living will, if you get the forms, because the forms do exist, we could put a link up for those if people want to do it.
Yeah, we should have made an affiliation with a solicitor here. We got our pal,
could have made some money.
Paula at Bird Ward Solicitor. She can help you out. We love Paula.
the thing in that is you can say that in this situation, I do not want this treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can be very specific. About
it has to be incredibly specific, though, surely, and that's where the issue is.
But you can have things like, I want to be given water and nutrition, or maybe I want the nutrition withdrawn. I just want the water. I want the medication. I want medication which is palliative to stop my pain. I don't want any. You know, if my heart stops, I don't want to be jump-started. You know, you can be very specific about what you want, and the forms take you through that.
Yeah.
But also, when you do a living will like that, it also gives you the option to look at other things, because you're looking at even things like funeral. What do I want to happen when I do die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that gets all built into that process as well.
Yeah.
And it does make you think about things... and deal with things that maybe people don't want to think about and deal with, which is why, in my experience doing the work that I do, that I get lots of people that when they are approaching the death point, when they're heading towards the exit door, they're suddenly surprised by it.
Sure.
As though it was a shock, as though I thought this would never happen to me. It was going to happen to everybody else. The fact that I'm 102 you know, it still didn't occur to me. Because, I mean, most people, when they're in their 90s or whatever, they say to me, no, I feel like I'm actually 18, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that my body doesn't work. But we have to come to terms with the fact that we're going to die. Everything's terminal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess one of the other things for me overall is the issue about whatever happens to us, does it disable us or does it enable us? Do we use it as reasons to stop doing things?
Yeah, well, that's for the Paralympians are so inspirational. Not that I watched the Paralympics, actually. I kind of that passed me by a little bit.
Yeah.
But
I sit here sometimes in the consulting room here. I can see out onto the road, right?
Yeah.
And up the top of this road, there are half a dozen people who are of an age, yeah, or of a condition, and they have these mobility scooters, and some of them really whap up and down the road, like really fast, yeah. And the thing is, even if your legs are dicky, even if your lungs don't work, you know, even if things don't happen for you so you can get around, if you can get your backside in a scooter, you can go off and you can do all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go to the movies.
You can see the moon, then.
Yeah. Well, you could go to the moon. Yeah. You can go to the bingo. You can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, even the buses around here have a ramp, don't they? So if you appear on your scooter, when the guy opens the door, he lets down the ramp and up you go into the bus.
Accessibility, man, yeah.
Yeah, it's there. And the only thing that stops us doing that is what's going on in our mind and our emotions. Either we are disabled or we use it as another way of being enabled.
Yeah.
You know, accepting the fact that you can't dance the cha-cha, you know, there's very little that you can't do if you've got wheels under you that you could do with legs.
So Bruce Fortyce, he didn't need to quit strictly, did he? He could have done on his mobility scooter, come down on a stair lift down those stairs.
Yeah.
You didn't need to quit, Bruce.
It'd be keep scootering.
Yeah, his jokes were starting.
They were getting bad. They were getting bad.
But fair to this man, he's a good... Good fella, isn't he?
Yeah. How old is he?
He's about 103.
Is he?
Is he
that young?
He must have been in his 80s, maybe. Late 70s, early 80s.
Mm.
Yeah, in his show business, all
early
his life.
80s ever thought, yeah.
It was like a 60, 70-year show business career, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm taking the mickey, but...
British institution.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair dues.
Yeah. Us, we'll be a British institution.
No, yeah.
We could still be doing this when we're disabled.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I wonder how long we will be doing it after all that. I wonder how long this will go on for. How much longer will I have to do this for?
Oh, my God. No. It's Wednesday. I've got to do another podcast.
Yeah. I've been... I know a big, as regular listeners will know, I'm a big Formula One fan, so there was an incident at the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really know what happened at first. I was watching the race, because it was an early start, the Japanese race. For those who don't know, there's been a guy's had a very serious head injury.
How is he?
He's critical, but stable.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been footage released of a fan, because it was really... No, I didn't know what happened at first, because... the red flag went out. There was double yellows for an incident, which he had seen, which wasn't that bad. It would have been bad 20 years ago, but safety's that good now, it wasn't. And then red flag straight away, so no one knew, and then it kind of started to filter out that something had happened, and then a couple of days later, there's a fan that saw the crash filmed it on his camera, put it on YouTube, so there's like pretty harrowing, shocking footage of this Formula One car going underneath the tractor, 100 mile an hour. So it's pretty shocking. It's incredible he's still alive, to be honest.
Yeah.
Amazing. But so you just wonder what state he's going to be.
He'll be in, when he does,
So hopefully, I can't see how he's going to race an F1 car.
I think one of the worst disabilities, if we're looking at that end of things, is when you get somebody who is in a vegetative state.
Yeah.
That we can tell that there's brainstem function, so we know that there is something going on.
Mm.
But the person is effectively in a never-ending coma.
Yeah.
And the problem then, and very often it's down to the family that are sat around the bed. It's like there's a decision to turn off the machines.
Mm.
You know, what do we do? But lots of disability issues aren't about the person that's in the bed. If someone is in that kind of illness situation, the people that are making the decisions are the doctors and are the relatives.
Yeah. Well, Jules Bianchi is the guy, he's the driver and his family jetting in from France, where he's from, and sitting by his bed. And to be fair, they've been releasing daily press releases, yeah, like keeping fans informed of his conditions, so hopefully we'll get some good news. But yeah, it's I don't know, it doesn't look too good, to be honest.
It is amazing. I've worked with loads of people over the years who have had skull injuries where they've actually lost bits of bone and had either quite profound brain damage or scrapes through the brain tissue, stuff like that. And then they've ended up with a titanium plate, a titanium cap in. And apart from the fact that it gets a bit cold in the winter and a bit hot in the summer, the titanium seems to be amazing. And I do see people come through what are quite disabling situations. You know, people that at one point couldn't walk and had to learn to walk again, and now they are dancing the cha-cha or whatever. You know, I mean, it's amazing when you see that.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on him, but yeah, I mean, this guy, it's weird. It's not weird. You know, when people are younger and things like this happen to them, it makes it's more of an impact than if he'd been 80 odd. Not that he would have been driving a Formula One car at 80, but this guy was 25. He was driving for one of the backmarker teams, but he was a Ferrari. He was coming through the Ferrari youth scheme, so he was going to drive a Ferrari in 2 or 3 years, and he was a good driver. So it's a shame, isn't it? But yeah, the parents are there and having to be the having to look after him all over again, eh?
Yeah. I think that's hard for people. When you're working with a family where they've had somebody, for whatever reasons, has remained a child, in effect, in terms of dependence.
Mm.
They may have the mind of an adult, but maybe they're physically they're a child. And you've got parents who are in their 70s who've got this child who's maybe in their 50s, and they're still having to look after them as a child.
I know. The question that needs to be asked then is, like, our technology's become so good that we can keep people alive and keep them going, but it's whether we should in some cases, isn't it?
It's a huge, huge issue, because people that naturally would die, we keep alive.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that as a good thing and an advance in kind of human culture, human understanding. It's only over time that we will see it. The thing that I'm never sure about in terms of our intervention is all the IVF programs, which are fabulous because people end up with children. But what we do is we take two people that nature's saying these two people shouldn't reproduce.
Yeah.
And then what we do is we force a reproduction. And the thing in that for me is that we then send off those genes that nature was trying to avoid into the gene pool.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got some pals going through IVF at the moment, so I'm real careful here.
Yes, well, the ramifications of it that don't come through for many generations. But if we allow genes to go off into the gene pool that were never intended to be there, we don't know what the implications of that will be.
Yeah.
We have a case at the moment of a woman who's the first woman who's given birth to a baby through a transplanted womb.
Yeah. Okay, I saw the headline. I haven't read much on that.
Quite amazing that we can do that.
Mm.
You know, and I suppose once we can start doing that, the sky is the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be interesting if they could transplant a brain, wouldn't it? What would be the outcome of that?
Frankenstein, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Baron von Frankenstein. Yeah, it's all interesting stuff. We've talked about, before we came on air, about managing an illness and taking control of it in terms of making sure you're getting the right treatment as well, and not just... Obviously, you know, we've got an amazing healthcare system here. We get a lot of good advice, but it's kind of a lot of times, especially when you're seeing a GP, perhaps it's kind of a bit of guesswork going on. And
Diagnosis, educated set of guesses. Doesn't matter what it is. It's always that way round. And if you're lucky, the person's got it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they've got it right, you're in heaven. If they've got it wrong, maybe you've got to take several bites of the cherry before you get it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd always hear the stories of someone who's had backache and they've gone to the doctor and they've given them some kind of Voltarol or something and sent them away, and it's gone on and on and on and on. Then it turns out the person's got cancer and it's spread into their bones, you know.
Yep.
So there will always be those kinds of stories. But if you're a GP and you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of people, inevitably you get some things wrong. You can't not.
Yeah.
And it's easy for us to criticise individually, to say, you know, that the doctor failed me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe they did, but maybe they got it right for 10,000 people and got one wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's always tough. And I think it's tough on doctors because they are in a huge position of responsibility.
Yeah.
And they do stick their head on the line as soon as they make a diagnosis.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I think that idea about I have to be the expert in my illness. If I'm told that I've got Wongo-Bongo disease or something, I need to go and study. I need to understand. I need to understand it on a lot of levels. I need to understand it physically, emotionally, and mentally. But I need to understand about medication. I need to understand how food affects. Well, you know, there's all kinds of things. If I actually embrace it and understand it and I can become the expert in it, then I can be enabled by it and not disabled by
it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can, and that process of learning as well is can be quite enjoyable, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to use the analogy of my trouble with my car recently. The battery has been changed, and that's kind of fixed a lot of other things because we weren't sure before we took it to the garage if it was the battery, because they've had problems with the fuel line as well, we thought, and the starter motor as well, but obviously that was kind of obviously linked to the battery. So, but, you know, I went through a load of processes. I was sat in the car tinkering with loads of things, checking stuff. And got some good advice, because luckily I know a mechanic as well. So I spoke to him on the phone and just dropped in. And turned out, yeah, we changed the battery, and that fixed a whole host of issues, which I wasn't sure about. But I really enjoyed the process of learning about what it might have been, and checking all these things. So that process of learning, life's for learning.
Yeah, interesting cars, aren't they? Some people have to have a new car every couple of years, kind of thing, so that they're...
Yeah. I'm in trouble with Bethan, really, because she's lost a bit of confidence and a little face in our car, because it's been playing up a bit in the last few weeks. But I quite enjoy having a car that has a bit of character to it and has little things going wrong, and I like trying to fix it rather than going out and just getting a new one. That's too easy, man. Or just taking it somewhere to get fixed straight away. I quite like tinkering, and not that you can tinker with cars that much anymore.
No, my car is just coming up to the 100,000 on the clock. And I've always been the kind of person who I will buy a car and I will run it until it's kind of saying I've had enough now.
Yep.
So I had one car that I ran for 146,000 before I passed it on to someone else and they carried on using it. But I'm at that decision point. Do I get a new one?
What year is that one? I know you've got
it's about 5-6 years old, something like that.
Yeah, was it brand new when you bought it, was it?
It was an ex-demonstrator, so it had done a couple of thousand.
I've spoken about this with pals, and a car should be good, really, now for 200,000 miles.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. It's just whether it's the whole status thing of... But it's a nice little motor you got there.
Yeah, I like that. It's good.
If it's still running nicely, keep it.
It's happy. As long as it keeps working, I'm fine.
Yeah, cost-effective-wise.
As long as it can go to Italy and back, then it's my car.
Exactly, man.
Yeah.
The cheapest way with a car is just to buy one that's going to last you a while and run it forever. You can keep buying new ones, you know.
But cars, like people, are terminal, aren't they? As soon as you take the car out of the showroom, it's in terminal decline. There's going to come the point where it's going to stop.
That's right.
Yeah, and end up in the scrappers.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it becomes a vintage car and you keep redoing it.
Yeah, and the value goes up and up. Yeah, possible, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. That's enough power analogies.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to say?
No, I'm okay. My thing is, if there's a self-help tip, the self-help tip is become aware of your system, your body, your issues, and become an expert on it.
Yep.
And two, do pay attention to the idea of should you be making a living will? Because if something happens to you and you find yourself lying in a bed with tubes up everywhere and unable to communicate directly with the physicians or your family to express your wishes as to what you want to happen for you, if you've already thought about it and done it and it's on paper, you haven't got to worry about that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big issues, but important ones.
Hey, man, that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
That's what we're here to do. You got a resource of the week?
Yeah, good book. It's called Living with a Long-Term Illness, The Facts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good little book. You can get it from Amazon. There's two links up here, Google and an Amazon link. And it's the two people that wrote it. One is actually suffering a long-term illness, and the other one is their doctor. So
cool.
it's a good combination because you've got the understanding from both directions, which is good.
Nice. Okay, I've got a website as well, a charity called the Carers Trust. Their vision is a world where the role and contribution of unpaid carers is recognised, and they have access to the quality support and services they need to live their own lives. Carers.org UK charity. Some cool stuff on here, and importantly, there's a forum where I assume you can register and get stuck in with and get some advice and speak to people. It can be quite a lonely experience, I'm probably guessing, to be a carer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm putting a blog up at the moment, which is almost done, which is about what we're talking about today. But there'll be links on there as well on the blog to different things,
okay.
And looking a bit more at the psychological issues of what we're dealing with.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, nice one, Sean. Next week we're going to talk about waste.
Yes.
Well, was that what, like recycling and stuff?
Well, it's interesting. I see waste in virtually every level. I see people wasting food. I see them wasting resources, but I see them wasting love, wasting their lives, wasting their time.
This
I think waste is a big, big issue.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. You just said the word waste in a text for next week, so I thought, what could that be about? I like that.
Yeah.
That's quite a meaty one.
We won't waste our time. We'll get on.
We shan't. Let's not waste any more or other people's time, and let's shut up. Yeah, go to the website for the show notes and links, liveinthepresent.co.uk. Lots of cool freebies as well. If you put your email address in the box and sign up to our mailing list. Plus, we'll send you out weekly reminders about this show as well. In the meantime, Sean, you have a lovely week.
And you have a wild time. I really hope that by the time I see you next time, you will be another daddy.
Another daddy, yeah. I hope so, man. You'll be in the top 10 first people to know. Maybe top 20.
Come on.
Cool. All right, Sean, take it easy.
Yeah, you take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.